I'm Grant, an engineering and technology leader who will share the secrets of IT with you. Listen up, because we're about to get into it. Hey everyone, it's me, Grant. Thanks for giving this episode a listen. I realize I've talked about AI a lot recently, and I promise this is going to be the last AI episode that I put out for a while. You know, unless you all ask for more. This podcast is supposed to be about software engineering, and there just happens to be so much developing in the AI space that I can't help but feel at least a little responsible for sharing everything going on and translating the current events into a short version of what you should care about. You know, I posted about the drama with Sam Altman, CEO of OpenAI. First, he was fired very suddenly, then psych, he's back as their CEO. But now the board of directors is actually the ones who are fired, and Microsoft is involved somehow, and like Bret Taylor is now on the board of directors. What? There's like a lot of stuff happening. And if you only occasionally tune into the news, then I know at least some of that was lost in your day-to-day. But those types of things have a major impact on all of us. OpenAI's ChatGPT is the most advanced AI that we've ever seen, and already companies are jumping feet first into this technology. Business Insider announced that they were pivoting to AI, and then they laid off 10% of their workforce as a result. I've also heard about at least one CEO who laid off 90% of his call center support personnel and replaced them with ChatGPT. So what happens at OpenAI with their board of directors, leadership, and company direction is definitely going to impact all of us personally and professionally worldwide, it seems. Thankfully, the reason why I'm making this episode in particular is that there's a silver lining to all this. There was another story that broke somewhat recently, about a month ago, when President Biden signed an executive order regulating AI. Regardless of your politics, it happened. And it's some news worth paying attention to. It extends not just into our professional lives, but into our day-to-day lives, and I'm about to explain how. It was called the Executive Order on the Safe, Secure, and Trustworthy Development and Use of Artificial Intelligence. Sounds great, doesn't it? Well, if you have an extra 2 hours in your day to read and comprehend this little novella that he signed, then great. Otherwise, thanks for being patient as I read the document for you and put my thoughts together on it. And I'm not kidding, it's 20,000 words long. It took me a while to make this episode. There are 12 sections in the bill, and it truly does seem to be a good faith effort at regulating AI for the good of humanity, not just Americans, but worldwide, promoting responsible innovation, competition, and collaboration. And that's one of the important points to me, collaboration. If you're not aware, we've thrown $11 billion at OpenAI to develop ChatGPT. Well, maybe not us, but like some people with a lot of money invested in it, and they didn't all do it at the same time. OpenAI was actually founded in 2015, and it took about $1 billion to get from where they were at in 2015 to ChatGPT 3.5, which is the one that everyone started talking about in the news. That's lots of time and lots of money. Things are accelerating now because Microsoft pledged another $10 billion to OpenAI, and that's game-changing. If it took $1 billion to go from 2015 to ChatGPT 3.5 and 4, then $10 billion, just imagine where that can take ChatGPT 4 in the future. To contrast this, Meta, Google, and Microsoft have only spent a fraction of that to develop similar, although not quite as good, solutions. Microsoft has only spent $690 million since 1998 on AI. They haven't even broken the billion-dollar mark. Meta spent $60 million. But if you compare the capabilities of these other language models to ChatGPT, you'll see they're actually pretty darn close, even though not as much money has been invested. There's a good reason why this is the case, and this takes me to really a third group of people here that I want to consider. So there's OpenAI is one group, all of its competitors, and then there's the open source community. Things that Google, for example, consider major open problems have actually been solved by people in the open source community, and they're using them today. Running large language models on a phone is one of those things, or building a scalable personal AI. You can fine-tune one of these on your own laptop in a single evening. It's this third faction that I'm really excited about. You see, we can either throw $10 billion at OpenAI and let their 500 engineers go to town on the problem, or we can release open source models like Llama and let 300,000 AI engineers in the industry, and even more hobbyists like myself, play around with it and innovate. No matter how much you pay them, 500 people full-time cannot outcompete 300,000 people part-time. Google has basically admitted as much. The phrase used is, we have no moat, in other words, no way to prevent other competitors from coming onto our land and taking a bit of it from us. There is no secret sauce that Google or OpenAI possess. No patent, no proprietary gimmick that will protect them. The open source content is too strong and too quickly advancing to defeat. Large models like the kinds Google and OpenAI run actually slow them down. They're expensive to train and maintain. They're not even all that more capable than smaller models that can be iterated on much more quickly. This gives hobbyists and the open source community a significant speed advantage against the giant corporations. While OpenAI and Google are trying to train massive models, the open source community can iterate on a pre-trained model like Llama in a single day with $100 and a laptop. It's the same problem, or, well, situation rather, as the internet. There's a reason the internet is built on open source and not a proprietary backbone. You can't compete with open source, and I'm excited that AI is headed in the same direction. The nature of the problem lends itself to open source, and regulation in this regard is actually a good thing. It means that we're out of the Wild West. We can have standardization, lots of public collaboration, and legal guardrails to stay within so that all of mankind can benefit from innovation rather than a few companies at the top of the corporate food chain. Now, these big, giant, powerful companies are going to try and stay at the top and milk as much money from this as they can. But fundamentally, like the internet, this is moving in a good direction. Now, just like the early internet, we should all expect some conflict and technology land grabbing in the foreseeable future with regard to AI. Enter the time machine with me. Let's pretend that it's the year 2000, give or take a little bit. These are five real, insane, and let's be honest, corrupt things that happened. People want their money. The first one was Amazon trying to claim that they had a patent for a one-click checkout system. That's insane. This is not a revolutionary technology, this is just technology. It's kind of like you can't patent car doors as a thing, but you can patent a particular car door design. It's the same thing here. Another example was British Telecom claiming that it had a patent on hyperlink technology through one of its patents that it had filed way back in the 1970s. Ah, yes, 30 years ago, they envisioned the World Wide Web and hyperlinks. Definitely crazy. The third example I have here was Eolus Technologies suing Microsoft, claiming that they had a patent on embedding interactive elements inside of web pages. Now, I get that the internet at this time was basically just a bunch of static web pages that got served up. And then, to put it into perspective, Ajax hadn't even been invented yet. But this claim, claiming that you own the concept of interactive elements on a web page, would be like photographs being invented, and then someone trying to call dibs on videotapes. Like, yeah, we all know it's headed in that direction. And again, to use an analogy, this would be like, you can patent VHS tapes or Betamax, but you can't patent the whole idea or concept of videotaping as a thing. And I appreciate you all really hanging in there with me. I realize we're three examples in of five and about 8 minutes into the podcast, and I haven't really even discussed the bill yet, but I'm getting there. I'm trying to build this up into a point so that you all will understand why I believe regulation is at least somewhat important. So I hope these three examples that I've shared so far start to get you thinking around what it would be like if everything were completely deregulated or not regulated, and kind of the impacts that it could have on you and I if we try and use a type of technology. These are outlandish examples, at least in hindsight, but at the time, these were real things companies tried to patent. Can you imagine a world where you can't record a video or take a picture without paying a royalty to a company for the simple act of taking a picture or a video? Like, it's crazy, but as a man living in a capitalist society, I think I can understand a business's incentive to want to try and patent these things. Like, I get that. That makes perfect sense. But I, as a consumer, as a citizen of America, wouldn't want to live in a world where these types of fundamental behaviors are patented by a company where I have to effectively pay a fee to do something enjoyable, right? It's like every transaction, microtransactions for real life. Oh my goodness, that'd be crazy. So anyways, moving on to example number four here. This is when the company NTP sued REM, who were the makers of the BlackBerry. NTP claimed that they had a patent on wireless email delivery. Just think about that. Wireless email delivery. Wireless email. What is email but just an arrangement of bits, ones and zeros, transferred over a wireless communications protocol? Like, it's just, it's how one transfers data over the air. If this had been granted, then the delivery of any type of data going across a wireless network could have been patented. It's literally all just binary data, like I said. It doesn't matter if it's email or a JPEG or an MP4 or an MP3. There's nothing inherently unique or patentable about delivering a certain arrangement of bits across a wireless network. The network does the delivery, and the bits are arranged in a format that the computer knows how to interpret as an email. So if this had been granted, then one could patent JPEG over wireless, MP4 over wireless, MP3 over wireless. So you're charging someone a service fee every time you stream a video. And this is just the wireless aspect. I mean, theoretically, one could also patent a wired aspect. Like, totally crazy. So anyways, I thought that was a good example of insanity in patent world. And the last one here is Forgent Networks claiming that they have a patent on JPEG compression. And now this one actually isn't so bad, in my opinion. The issue here is they only claimed that they had a patent on JPEG compression after it had become a widespread standard. So the act of compressing an image into a format where you have like maybe a slightly less good image, but the size of the image is much smaller, that's what JPEG compression is. And so the process of coming up with an algorithm that would actually do that effectively and is easily transferable to the masses for them to use on the computers, like, yeah, I actually do believe that's the type of thing that should be patented. But it was like a Trojan horse, where it had become widespread first, and then retroactively they tried to say, oops, I patented all of that stuff. And it's not really fair to give away something for free and then yell that people owe you money about it later after it's caught on. So thankfully that one wasn't granted either, even though if they'd have done it the right way from the beginning, then maybe I could get on board with it. But again, that was the last example here that I've got of some of the crazy things that were happening at the dawn of the internet. And think, we're going into this world of AI where these same kind of crazy patentable things are going to be happening. And so I think it really behooves us all to know what's going on in the AI space, because just like I said at the dawn of the internet, we're not entirely sure what end runs these companies are going to try and make around us as the consumer to try and land grab some either fee or money from us in order to use technology that fundamentally should be free for everybody to use. So on the flip side of the coin here is I'm not naive. I do actually understand about regulatory capture as well, which is why I'm not like all in on regulation, right? I think too much or too little are both bad sides of this equation. Now, if you haven't heard of the term regulatory capture before, one form of regulatory capture is when a policymaker actually works to serve a commercial interest that it was intended to be an authority over in the first place. So let's go down this rabbit hole for a second before I actually get into what President Biden signed in his executive order. And I think it's probably best to start off as like a story here. So once upon a time, former President Donald Trump appointed Ajit Pai, a former Verizon lawyer, to run the Federal Communications Commission, or the FCC. If you don't know what it is, the FCC is in charge of regulating companies like Verizon. During this time, a thing called net neutrality was being talked about a lot. Net neutrality is the idea that your internet provider, someone like Verizon, in fact, should send you data as quickly and reliably as it can. That means when you click a link, the internet provider tries to get you that data as fast as possible. As a consumer, I simply say this is getting me what I paid for. But when you talk about regulation and policy, this is about regulating those companies so that they do what the consumer expects them to do. Now, the catch here is that, obviously, Verizon does not like net neutrality. Why could that be? Well, if internet providers like Verizon could control what data is prioritized to be sent to you, then not only could they charge you internet access fees, but they could charge the companies you like to access the services of a fee to prioritize their access to serve data to you. Now, here's an example of what this might look like. Let's say you like TikTok. Well, if TikTok didn't pay Verizon the priority access fee, but Instagram did, then you might be more likely to use Instagram over TikTok. You might think TikTok's service is unreliable, when in fact it's Verizon intentionally throttling TikTok's data to you so that you just think it's worse. Now, can you see how this sets up an unfair advantage for companies in the marketplace? Due to lack of regulation, one company can pay to have a competitive edge over its competition who can't, so to speak, pay to play in this industry, right? TikTok would be paying for priority access to you, and a new competitor, a startup company that doesn't have the money or the funding of TikTok, would be unable to pay those fees. And so a competitor of TikTok probably couldn't emerge as an effective competitor because they can't pay to play. And you as a consumer lose out in this deal, while all the telecom companies win, because not only can they charge you for access to the internet, but they charge the companies you like to use access to you. So they're getting money paid in both directions on the internet. Well, hey, come to think of it, didn't I mention that Ajit Pai was also a former Verizon lawyer? Yes, this man did in fact repeal net neutrality in 2018. So some states, like California, have passed state laws undoing or preventing damage to consumers, and about a month ago, in October of 2023, the current FCC leaders voted on a plan seeking to restore net neutrality. But until that actually comes into fruition, we got to deal with being on the losing end of this deregulation, potentially being charged fees for hardware devices that we didn't actually lease from a telecom company, for example, or having our bandwidth throttled because our internet provider just felt in their heart like we had used too much data on our unlimited data plan. Or having our mobile carriers sell our geolocation data to data brokers who can then sell it to law enforcement, bounty hunters, our ex-girlfriend or boyfriend, or really just about anyone who wants to buy it, circumventing the Fourth Amendment, which basically grants us a right to privacy and prevents unwarranted search and seizure, which in this case would extend to our digital data and privacy. Unless, of course, you know, the law enforcement agency could just simply buy it from a public data broker. Yeah, all of these are very real examples of how regulating the digital space impacts us as people. If you don't want to believe me on this one, just go to safegraph.com and see how you can purchase your own digital footprint along with everyone else's. And nah, Safegraph didn't sponsor this episode. Although, come to think of it, I didn't really reach out to them either. I'll have to take a note to do that next time. Now, back to this AI thing and why I believe regulation is probably good at this point in time. Now, I said before, I don't believe all regulation is a good thing. But I do think that no regulation is more indicative of a bad thing than not. And this order will allow competition to emerge into this market early on by directing the federal government to foster a fair, open, and competitive ecosystem for AI and its related technologies. It also limits dominant companies from using their control over compute and data infrastructure that you use to unfairly disadvantage smaller competitors. Let's say Google notices that you happen to be running an LLM on GCP, perhaps even one of the competitors to Bard. Well, it could throttle your compute speed so that your AI always performs worse than Bard. And Google may just happen to release Bard then as an upsell inside of the GCP ecosystem, making it worthless for you to even try to run your own model. Well, thankfully, that behavior is effectively illegal now. I don't believe regulation is like, it's not a silver bullet. It's not going to prevent them from trying to gain market share and stop you from outcompeting their own internal products, right? Like, they're still going to try and do that to you, but it's a little harder now. And the executive order is also intended to protect you and I from the misuse of AI. Now, I don't know about you, but I don't personally want OpenAI selling my queries to ChatGPT to anyone. Could they? Well, Before this executive order was in place, they absolutely could. Now, I ask ChatGPT more things than I ask Google. And I can tell you, I ask Google some pretty embarrassing things. And I'm glad to at least have a veil of protection in this domain now, somewhere I feel safe. The same thing is true for my DALL-E or Midjourney image creations. I've asked for certain images to be made, you know, to like test the boundaries of what AI can do. Without context or intent, I'm sure my creation history looks a little iffy to some people in law enforcement, but thankfully they won't be getting their hands on that. Well, I probably shouldn't just leave that one there, so let me get this on the record officially. So you all know I'm like into this podcasting thing, and I had an idea. I was looking into making a fully AI-generated, true crime-style podcast slash video series on YouTube. Fictional stories, but with AI voiceovers, AI-generated images of crimes committed in real places, with an AI-generated script. Now, not too gory, because obviously there are content policies on all of these image creation things, but depicting crimes committed, perhaps of a body in a lake or in the woods, you know, things that would be associated with crime. And I still think that, like, this whole idea sounds pretty cool, but please don't look at my DALL-E image history without that context. It's just another reason that I am thankful for some small bit of regulation and, even if it's not foolproof, some level of protection in this space. But back to the executive order. For those of you who are listening, who are aspiring technologists wondering what you should do after high school, or who want to change your careers, then this order is also for you. It aims to invest in AI-related education and training, too. AI is going to create new jobs, just like the invention of the automobile did. And with that, we need people who can do these new jobs. We can now streamline visa processing for non-US citizens who are working or studying in the field of emerging technology. And we can help fund AI research and development programs through the National Science Foundation and the Secretary of Energy. This may come in the form of public-private partnerships, allowing money to flow from the government back into schools or businesses through contracts or grants, tax rebates, or other such mechanisms, maybe even scholarships or financial aid. That'd be pretty cool, I think. Did we see any of this level of attention with blockchain, crypto, or NFTs, or was I asleep during that time? Like, I rail on those technologies all the time only because I feel they really are solutions seeking a problem. Now, don't get me wrong, they really are great solutions, but we already have other sufficient mechanisms for doing the same jobs that they want to do already. AI, on the other hand, has real practical applications, and it does them better than classical methods. Like I said, I currently use ChatGPT more than Google at this point in time. That's a material impact on my life from this technology. And I just say Google things because everyone knows what I mean when I say that. In real life, I actually use DuckDuckGo pretty exclusively for the privacy aspects. And come to think of it, I haven't actually used the latest iteration of Bing Chat yet. They baked AI into Bing, and it's apparently pretty good. I don't really want to use something to search the internet for me and tell me what matters. Not yet. I don't trust AI to that degree yet. So I personally feel that the experience of using a search engine with AI integrated is not what I'm looking for. I want to use AI as like a personal assistant and maybe a database of knowledge of the ages that I can just talk with about things. And then if I want to do research, that's when I'll switch over to the actual search engine and vet sources on my own. Like when I'm looking for a site, in other words, a store of data, I'm going to use a search engine. I only really use a classical search engine like this when I'm looking for data on a topic for me to work through, or a very specific website or reference that maybe I came across before. It's like research at this point. The hunt for what matters is what matters to me. My personal job, then, is to evaluate who is telling the truth or whose information is more correct than someone else's. And then I can filter that through my worldview and come to a conclusion. When I'm not doing hard data collection like that, then like a rough swag or guess at the answer is really all I'm looking for. And a pre-trained AI is just fine for that. I just don't want to use the AI's worldview to interpret the data. I just want to have a more free-form conversation with the AI and then interpret data using my own personal worldview. Right? Does that make sense to you? I feel like a lot of people use AI in this manner, and I would be very curious to know what your personal approach is, but also if you like the experience of Bing Chat or AI integrated into some of these searching functions for you, where they're really perusing the data on the back end and then showing you things that it thinks matters rather than you deciding what matters for yourself. That's the step that I think is scary for me to hand over ownership of to an AI. And on that note, don't worry, I didn't ask ChatGPT how good this executive order is or what I think I should, or what it thinks I should think of the executive order, because this is largely just a matter of opinion. I'm sure some of you listening to me right now maybe even disagree fundamentally with my stance on regulation, and I would love to hear your thoughts, so please don't be shy about sharing them. I did a whole episode on this. You are more than welcome to disagree with me and tell me that. I will grow as a person, hopefully, through that conversation. So I didn't ask ChatGPT what conclusions I should come to from reading the executive order. This executive order is my real life. I don't want an artificial intelligence telling me what I should feel about this bill. I want to read the bill and feel things. And so that's what you get. You know who I am if you've listened to any of my episodes before, and if you continue to listen, then you probably respect my opinion. And so this is my personal opinion on the executive order. It gives me hope. It makes me feel like there's a possibility that I'm going to be safe and secure in this new world as AI starts to take off. We didn't miss the boat on this one like we missed it on the internet. The internet got out of control. You all were probably there. Most of you were probably there. Those of you who were born after the internet, you missed the crazy days of the internet. But you're headed into new crazy days of AI. And I'm personally excited to see that people are paying attention this time around. We're not just relegating AI to the sidelines. We actually see how it can impact humanity, and we're trying to get in front of this thing and do what we can to make sure that the future is one that we want to have with AI rather than the internet pretty much taking us by storm. And suddenly I'm shopping on Amazon for everything in my entire life, it seems. So anyways, I'm very excited about this thing. And I didn't ask ChatGPT what I should think about this bill, but there are things that I do ask ChatGPT. I asked ChatGPT things like, was Captain Ahab, even though he was dragged to his death by Moby Dick, finally satisfied over harpooning the great white whale? And the answer to that, my friend, is no. The journey of hunting Moby Dick was ultimately tragic, self-destructive, and unfulfilling to Captain Ahab. And there you have it. Now, turning back hard to the matter at hand, I think I should probably wrap this episode up, because otherwise you would have probably been better off just reading the executive order yourself rather than listening to me review it for you. I hope, even if you disagree with my stance on regulation, that you can see some of the good here. Whether you agree with Biden's politics or not, I tried to actually keep this entire podcast politically agnostic, not endorsing either the right or the left or the blue or the red or wherever you stand. I'm taking the executive order and the content in it fully in and of itself as an issue. So discard who signed what bill, when and where. This is about the bill itself, or the executive order, rather. And it's something that I truly believe you and I will benefit from as Americans. For those of you who are not U.S. citizens, it's also a very important precedent for the U.S. to be setting for your own country leaders to reflect on and consider. I think we all know America is a very large economic powerhouse in the world, not just like economically, but also politically and in a whole number of other ways. And so by the United States setting this precedent internally, other countries around the world may follow suit and have your interests in mind, even though our Constitution doesn't extend outside the United States. But even for some of you who are in the U.S. on a visa, this makes immigration change for you all, especially if you're working in one of these emerging technologies. So you are also impacted by this thing in a good way, right? It makes it easier for you to come here and work on these exciting technologies. This executive order is well-intentioned and not perfect, but it does lay the groundwork for the protection of our personal information and privacy. It enables business competition, collaboration in AI and other emergent technologies. It allows the government to fund education and small businesses in these new areas, and it even helps with immigration and growing talent in this domain. Overall, I think I'm satisfied with it. I am weary of too much government oversight, but I'm also afraid of no government oversight. It's similar to the establishment of the FDA and the Pure Food and Drug Act of 1906, if you're familiar with that. This is a story that has stuck in my mind for ages. Before the FDA and the Pure Food and Drug Act of 1906, milk producers would add water, chalk, plaster, and other cheaper and potentially toxic ingredients to milk to make it look more fresh and palatable. This is a nightmare for me as a dad of three kids. And that, my friends, is what a purely free market with no regulation leads to. Feeding your kids, your infants, with plaster milk. I believe that this executive order is necessary in this fully unregulated space. It will prevent corporate greed early on from creating terrible tragedies in your life and mine in the AI space. These protections won't last forever, and they're not perfect, and they're not guaranteed, right? It's an executive order, for crying out loud. But it's something, and I'm not about to let perfect be the enemy of good here. Continual improvement is a core tenet of my life. So from here on, we can only try to iterate on what's been done and make it better step by step through true legislation, not just simply an executive order. It does not end here, it begins here. And on that positive note, just want to say thanks for listening to me. I hope this gave you a little better understanding of just what a big deal this executive order was. Let me know your thoughts on LinkedIn. Send me an email at grantdryden.com or hello@grantdryden.com. And that's really all I've got for you for now, but I feel like that was a lot. That was a big bill to go through. So thanks for giving me some time, a couple of months here before I put out my next episode. I'm already starting to try and get the next topic under control, but with this one firmly in the books, it gives me time to focus on a non-AI episode for next time. So I appreciate you all, and that's all I got. So I'll see you again next time. I'm not going to do that.